It may be the 264th time, but I'm just as excited to be back with y'all once again for the Parish of the Patriots as ever. I appreciate y'all joining. I know the vast majority, heck, maybe all of you, return members of the congregation. I'm glad you keep coming back. I really am. I appreciate it. If you are new, thank you for finding. I don't know how you found us, but I'm glad you did. Stick with us through the whole show. It varies in quality. It varies in quality. Some parts of the show may be boring and suck, and some parts may be good. We do have a Christian-specific segment, a sermon, if you would. That's roughly the halfway point of the show. Listen to it. Give it a shot. Just if you, I know you can be thinking, I don't want to be hearing none of that Jesus stuff. Give it a shot. I ain't going to kill you. It's like 30 minutes. Give it a shot. Listen to it. I have people who say they're non-believers. They listen to it to get something out of it. So give it a try. It probably won't be what you think. It may be better. Maybe worse. I don't know. I don't care. But if you do get something out of it, drop something in the place, in the place of the plate. Put something in the plate. Don't be. I can't talk today. We're just going to have to quit. Well, that's it. We're wrapping up the show. No, we ain't wrapping up the show. I always go, that's because I haven't finished my second cup of coffee this morning as I record this. Don't be shy. Pay those tithes. Drop something in the plate. I have the ultimate privacy coin. We do the ultimate privacy coin here at the Parish of the Patriot. That would be snail mail. If you don't understand how to fill out an envelope, ask your elders. They can hook you up. When you put the address and whatnot on the envelope, don't put it in cursive, though, because I can't guarantee the people at the post office can read your cursive, so you get to print that. But, however, if you want to drop your note inside the envelope, if you want to drop your note in there, you are welcome to use cursive. We could do it like it's like a secret code. See, like you'd be like, yeah, but what if somebody like opened it up and read it? See, if it's in cursive, they're going to be like, oh my gosh, they're using a secret code. They must be plotting something crazy because they figured out some kind of code. Look at this. It's just like a bunch of squiggly lines. They look like little waves. Sorry, I'm having a Gen X moment. You can write your notes in cursive. I can decipher them, probably. May God bless y'all, because some of y'all, I look at your notes and it's like, I read cursive. I'm quite fluent in cursive. But some of y'all, it ain't even in cursive. And I'm like, I don't even know what this word's supposed to be. I'm looking at the words before and after, trying to guess. But that's okay. Okay. You know I love you. Anyway, yeah. Yeah, drop something in the plate is appreciated. Oh, wait, I got all excited. You can find the information right here on the description page for the Parish of the Patriots. There it is. Got the email address there, too. If you want to just drop a note, you cheat. You don't want to drop nothing in the plate, but you won't drop me a note. You can do that. Maybe you don't understand how to do cursive. I can't help you with that via email. I can't help you. Oh, that gets us to listener supporter mailbag. And the good thing about a listener supporter mailbag, like last week, got a lot in the listener supporter mailbag. It makes things easier for me because y'all be coming up with stuff. It gives me ideas of what to talk about. This week's a little sketchy, Mr. T. Mr. T's he's the weekly supporter here. I always get a note from Mr. T. So Mr. T is it this week. With support for our people. I appreciate you, Mr. T. You're the lone guy this week. I would know, Mr. T. I don't see something, Mr. T. I know that, see, because the ultimate privacy coin sometimes runs slow. Sometimes it's like it gets hung up in the blockchain. But if it was 2 weeks, I'd be like something done happened to Mr. T. So he done got zipped. They zipped in, ziplined right in on him. Using the privacy coin. They want him to explain what this cursive is. I was thinking right before recording the show, as I was working on the coffee here, I was thinking, you know, one of the mistakes in my whole life I myself have made back before I was as enlightened as I humbly am now. And one of the mistakes you'll hear conservatives make is this idea, they'll say that, you know, these people, these quote-unquote, these liberals, liberals, you see, they have good intentions. They're just, you know, naive. They have good intentions. And I say, they're letting these people off the hook. Now, I get that, like, run-of-the-mill, you know, run-of-the-mill normie liberals, they probably do have good intentions. But when you're talking about the ones who are able to promote policy, they have good intentions. They're just naive. They're just misled. And this got me thinking. The difference between liars and deceivers and people with good intentions. Because there are people that have good intentions. How do you tell the difference? Because apparently conservatives can't. Conservatives are like, oh, they mean well. The poor dears, they mean well. The conservative is always just trying to be nice, you know. They're just trying to, we just need to explain to them that it does not work that way. And then they're shocked when they don't pay any attention to their nonsense. No, nobody even pay no attention to them. And they just keep doing what they're doing. They're like, I keep trying to explain this to them and they don't understand. Because if it's category error going, you see, there's a difference. Today we're going to talk about spotting the difference. And this applies to politics. This applies to people in your own personal life. Because, see, I like things that apply to your own personal life because they're things you can use every day, you know? If I handed you a tool that you could only use in one specific instance at one specific time in your entire life, that would be a really important tool, yes. But you'd probably be a little more excited if I handed you a tool and it's, you'd be like, man, this is awesome. I can use this thing every day. I recently got this thing. I don't even know what you call it. I call it the Chop-O-Matic 5000, but that's not the actual name. I cook. I discovered in life that late in life that I actually, if I say so myself, I'm a pretty decent cook. So I cook. And you know, you spend a lot of time doing meal prep. This has something to do with what we're talking about. Even I'm not sure, but we're going to find out. No, I got this thing recently. I call it the Chop-O-Matic 5000. You got these two razor blade crisscrossed grate things that go in the center. And in the center of the lid goes on top of the bowl. If the recipe calls for diced onion, cut your onion, set it on there, and wham, slam the lid down. They're diced. They're little small cubes. If it calls for chopped, you put the bigger ones. They've got wider spots. Bam! That's cool. You know why it's cool? Because I get to use that thing. You use it every day. I do. I got to do a recipe. You're always going to have something. Chopped this, diced that. I got that whip. You don't realize how much time you spend sitting there on the cutting board. It's not like I'm lazy. You sit there. Now, I just go, boom, and I'm done, and I move things right along. In other words, things that can help you out. Things you can use every day. That's the stuff that's important. You know, if it just applies to politics, then, you know, yeah, it's useful, but it's of limited use. I like things that you can use every day. How do you tell the difference between liars and deceivers and those who have good intentions, but they're simply wrong? Simply wrong. And the answer to this is actually quite simple. You see, the person has good intentions, the means well, but they're just misled. And it doesn't work out. It doesn't work out. That has just by pure happenstance, you get this other result than what they were expecting. At some point in time, that person is going to acknowledge this and admit they were wrong. Because look, we all been there. You know, we've meant well, and we do something with all the best intentions. It blows up in our faces. You live long enough, it's going to happen to you. And what are you going to do? What are you going to do as a decent, normal human being? Somebody says, hey, man, you screwed this all up. And you can say, man, look, I know. Sorry. You know, and never, this get me off on something. Look, never be afraid. Never be afraid to own your mistakes. You will find, look, if people go through and they think that, like, people are going to look down on them, you know, never be afraid to say you were wrong, because most people are going to expect you to make some kind of bullshit excuse, you know, and they say, hey, man, you didn't do this right. Look, this is all screwed up. Don't sit there and make excuses. You already knew that probably. And you're going to be, yeah, I have to tell you right now, I screwed that up. Yeah, that was me. They're going to be shocked. And they came in there expecting you to start arguing and justifying. So they're sitting there dreading going through this long drawn out thing to try to, you know, just get you to admit. And then when you're like, yeah, no, I did that for sure. That was me. Yeah, I screwed that up. And I did that because I thought this, this, and this would happen, but I was wrong. And then they're like, oh, okay. Yeah, no, because it doesn't work like that. See, you got to do this. And it's all nice. It's all nice. It goes smoother than if you sit there and try to make up a bunch of bullshit justifications because of your own pride. Just admit you were wrong. See, somebody with good intentions, it means well. They're going to just say, you know, at some point in time, even if at first it's begrudging, they don't, you know, nobody likes admitting they're wrong. At some point, they're going to say, yeah, I look, I thought it would work out, you know, that way. I thought this was a good idea, but I was wrong. I was wrong. Now, of course, the outcome of that, you know, being wrong, it's going to vary depending, obviously, on what you're wrong about. You know, if you let a bunch of strangers come live in your house because you think you're being a good person and just letting migrants come live in your house, you know, it's probably not going to turn out well. I mean, it may not be just absolute disaster. You may come to the realization you were wrong while they're stabbing you in the neck. Or just simply taking advantage of you and trashing your house or something along that scale. You don't want to be that far off. But at some point in time, you got to admit you were wrong. You see, the liar and the deceiver will never, ever admit they're wrong. Because they were doing it on purpose. A classic example is, let's talk about, the, you know, for instance, the civil rights. The civil rights, you know, St. Martin Luther King and the civil rights movement. It hasn't worked out real well. Where's our apology? Everybody is owed an apology because everybody was lied to. They're lied to. It came to white people and essentially said, oh, well, what we're doing. And when I say they, I'm not talking about black folks. If you think black folks came up with the civil rights movement, this show is too advanced for you. I'm not going to stop and back this up and go back to kindergarten. They came to white people and they said, we just think it would be better if black people were treated equally. You know, I mean, just give them a fair shake. You know, don't just discount them right off the bat because they're black people. I mean, we just want fairness, you know, and white people think about this as a group and say, yeah, we like treating people fair. Nobody should be treated unfairly. That sucks. That's not right. Just not even give somebody a chance because of how they were born. That's not right. Yeah. Yeah. So that's what this is about. Yeah. 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 That's what it's about. Yeah. Yeah. That's totally what it's about. Oh, well, that's what it's about. That's not such a bad thing. I mean, I don't want people to be treated ugly just because, you know, the way they were born and who they were born. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sounds good. Just about people, everybody being treated fair. Look, listen to the speech that was written. We'll have St. Martin Luther King read this speech that he so totally wrote himself. Just want all the little black children, the little white children. I have this dream. I have this dream. The little black children, the little white children all playing together. That sounds so nice. Yeah, it sounds good. Who could be against that? Fast forward to today. I think we're due an apology. But we're not getting one. Because they didn't mean it. They were lying. And it goes both sides. They lied to everybody. They went to the black people. And they said, this is about making your life better. You know? You should have a better house. You should have a better life. You should have a better, you know, this is about, we're trying to make your life better. Black folks said, yeah, that sounds good. Yeah, I'd like to have a better life. Fast forward to today. Did that work out? Do black people have a better life now than they did back then, before all that? Based strictly on results. I'm sorry. I mean, yeah, they can use whatever water fountain they want. At the cost, I'm sorry, but if they've been honest, they went to black people and say, well, the good news is you'll be able to use whatever water fountain you want and sit on whatever bus you want. It's only going to cost you your family, your neighborhoods that aren't hellhole war zones. You can live in a war zone, but hell, you can use a water fountain if you can find one. There ain't going to be none left because they're all tore up. Did they make black people's lives better? No. Have they apologized to black folks yet and said, hey, we had the best of intention. We're just trying to help you. We're sorry we've made your life shit. We've made your life worse. No, they ain't getting no apology. They ain't apologized to them. They ain't apologized to black folks. They ain't apologized to the white folks. See, a liar and deceiver is always going to double down on more lies. They never are going to say, oh, I was wrong. Because in their mind, they're not. Because it was the plan. It's the plan all along. We were the suckers. Well, we, our ancestors, those who came forward, they were the suckers for buying into it. They were the marks. Somebody that just had good intentions was mistaken. They'll apologize and say, I was wrong. I meant well. It didn't work out. I'm sorry about that. And you know, if you got somebody come up to you and say that, and you're like, let it go, you know, because it takes a man to do that. It takes a man to admit they're wrong. I said earlier, when you're at your job and you screw something up and your boss comes up and says, hey, did you do this? You screwed this up. If he's right, just say, yeah, I did. There's nothing wrong with following that up with explaining the reason why. Back in the day when I used to supervise people, back before I became a podcasting hermit. No, I'm not a podcasting hermit. I don't live like that. I used to tell people, look, I don't care if you screw something up, but like, go, at least have like a reason, you know, like if you screw something up and I say, hey, you screwed this up, at least be able to tell me, well, I thought that was okay because that's fine. I'll tell you, well, I understand that, but no, because it doesn't work that way. Now, more frustrating when somebody said, you say, hey, you screwed that up. And then first they lie. They try to deny. They say it wasn't them. And then finally, when they can't deny, and then you say, well, why did you do that then?
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know?
I don't know.
Just say, yeah, I screwed that up. I promise you, people will be taken aback. No, I'm serious. Because everybody got some kind of bullshit excuse. You know, and your boss going to come to you and say, hey, did you screw this up? And you're like, yeah, sure did. He's going to be like, okay, well, don't do that anymore. Because what is he going to say after that? He coming in there all good, geared to you see him. And he's like, oh, man, he's going to come get on my shit. Here he comes stomping over here. Well, one of the reasons he's stomping over there is because he's all geared up because he's ready for all the lies, excuse making, the justifications, the claims it wasn't you. He's ready for all that. And you're going to take the wind right out of you. You pop his balloon. You're going to take the wind right out of his sail when you're like, yeah, that's me. Sorry about that. I thought that, you know, this, but obviously I was wrong. It's screwed up. I'll fix that or whatever you want me to do. And you're going to see, I guarantee 9 times out of 10, you're going to see, unless your boss is just an asshole, you're going to see the wind come right out of his sails. And you're going to be like, oh, okay, because you thought he was just huffing and puffing, ready to cause a scene. No, he's building himself up because he's ready to have to deal with this whole barrage of nonsense. Just own it. Everybody wrong. People good intentions. Not a liar and deceiver. A liar and deceiver is deceiving you on purpose. So their answer is always going to be to double down. Double down on more lies. Hey, black folks. Black folks be like, wow, our neighborhoods are a war zone and we have no coherent families now. Just single parentage. What's up? What's up with that? And the liar and deceiver says, well, it's because these damn white people, they just keep doing harder and harder racism on you. Don't you know? We keep trying to help you. And every time we try to help you, they just keep doing more racism on you. Of course, you can't explain how the racism has turned their neighborhoods into a war zone. But don't worry, it's their fault. It's totally their fault. White people be like, hey, I thought we were doing this whole, you know, content of the character and not the color of the skin and all that. Well, the problem is you're such bigots. you're such bigots that you just keep doing the racism on these people. And, you know, the reason they're not all rocket scientists and sending us to the Mars mission right now is because you keep being so damn racist against, you keep hating these people. You might be like, well, I'm not hating on anybody. But yeah, but collectively you are. Collectively, all you white people are hating. Well, collectively, I think, you know, y'all shouldn't be doing this to the palace. Hey, it's anti-Semitism. Stop. You're not allowed to do that. That falls under this definition. Don't. Collectively, you. You see, there's never an admission of, oh, whoops, we were wrong. Nobody care. Just even with all the mess and the disaster, just come forward and say, hey, we were wrong. We meant well. Then we could start working on something. But no, you always going to get more doubling down because there was no good intentions to begin with. And it wears me out because conservatives always act like people got good intentions if they can just explain to them the error of their ways. Error of their ways. It'd be like somebody come in your house and they have a dream of stealing your stuff. So they waving a gun at you and you're going to sit there and tell them, look, if you would go get a normal regular job, if you would go get out there and get you a job, you wouldn't have to worry about going to jail. What happens if you get caught? You're going to go to jail. I just need to explain this to this young man. I'm trying to judge you on the content of your character, but all I keep seeing is the color of your skin. I'm trying to tell you. Don't even make no sense. It make no sense. They always try. Let me explain it. And then they don't understand. I don't understand, because the people that told you that at the beginning were lying. And those that are continuing to promote the same program today, they're lying too. And the conservatives, they keep on believing it. They're like, well, they mean well. Why would you think they mean well? It'd be like you, like I say, somebody, you all tied up in your house while they're ransacking your house. And they're like, well, they probably just got, you just imagine sitting there and being like, well, they were probably, you know, on their way to grandma's house, turning their life around, and they just happened to walk into my house. I'm pretty sure that wasn't what they were doing. Very tiresome. Very tiresome. And they go on and on like that. He just convinced them. They could just convince them that they're incorrect. It never even, it's like they just can't admit. They just never dawns on them that this is the plan all along. This is the plan all along. I don't know. Maybe it's just too unpleasant of a reality. I don't know. And of course, the lies just keep getting more absurd, you know? Every time I see in the media and they talk about, you know, the great replacement is this conspiracy theory. Conspiracy theory. Right here, y'all have this paper talking about, yeah, we're replacing these people. Don't believe your lying eyes of what we said. How come there are no white people on commercials anymore? Only white people I ever see in a commercial anymore is a white woman with a black man. What is that? It seems like this is some sort of intentional program. It's a conspiracy theory. Let's go ask the facts. Let's go ask the fact checkers. We have to have fact checkers now. We have to have fact checkers because, you know, otherwise you might start believing your lying eyes and not what they are telling you. But they're just misled. They mean well. They just don't want you having ugly feelings about anybody. Don't want you to be an evil hater. Evil hater. It's honestly, it's also tiring. I don't listen to them. You know, that's the most healthy thing. People, I mean, what can I do? Most healthy thing you can do is just unplug. Unplug from it. Don't get me wrong. I keep up on current events. Obviously, I have to. But I just enough to know what's going on. You know? I don't need to sit here and read a New York Times, you know, 50,000 word essay of lies to tell me that what I can see is the truth is not the truth at all. Actually, it's fill in the blank. Yeah, I'm not subjecting myself to that. I know they're lying. They don't have good intentions. They're lying. I know this. I don't need to listen to it beyond just to see, oh, what's the lie today? That's it. I'm not going to sit there and suggest you torture your mind. Torture your spirit. If you make yourself listen to their lies and then you get all twisted up, mad about why, you know what they do, and they speak in their home language. They speak in the language of their daddy. They're liars. Just don't listen to them. Pay no attention. I mean, yeah, you can look and see, okay, well, what are they saying? Let's hear a snippet. Yep, they're lying. That's all you need to do. Don't sit there and just, what else are they saying? Why? Why? I said, but it'd be like, did you hear what they said? Yeah, they're liars. What do you expect? What, do you think, what? Today, the White House spokespeople are going to come out and tell you the truth? You think Victoria Nuland's going to go do a speech and suddenly tell you the truth? No, stop. Stop. And that's the way conservatives be do, though.
That's the way they be do, man.
Conservatives, they be do that. They act like, you know, I can't believe. Why don't they just... Oh, shoot. I you see these articles and they just, you know, they so lie to your face, you know, and you see shill commenters and you wonder how many of them are shills and how many of them are just ignorant. You know, I saw something the other day. I don't even remember what the story is about, and it had comments on. I'm always interested to read through the comments because most of the time I can guess if it's an article that's going to be full of shills or if, you know, these are just people speaking of ignorance. And I saw this one article talking about people making comments out of ignorance. And again, I don't even remember what the topic was, but this person said something along the lines of these people, these Biden people, you know, you get an normie conservative take incoming. We've got incoming. We're fixing to get some normie conservatism. They want to turn America into some third world country like China. That's how you know people are ignorant. Now, you know, if this was the 1970s, you don't know. You know, you can be given an excuse for some kind of ignorance. But you got the internet now. And literally everybody can use the internet now. Except, I don't know, if you're really, really old, you maybe can't figure that out. You have no interest in it. That's whatever. But, I mean, you sit there and say, oh, they're turning America into a third world country like China. That is so backwards. America's already basically, so many aspects of this country is third world now, like China. Like this person has it in their head, this normie conservative have it in their head that people in China, like they're all just walking around, you know, farming rice paddies and living in dirt huts or something. Just go on YouTube, you know. Go find one of these new, go find these, there's multiple channels of people that live in China or they go in China and they tell you how it is. Now, there's also these channels that, you know, they their job is to tell you how awful it is. So they try to, you know, color it up. But go find these channels. People live there, people that go and visit and say, well, I want to go see what this place is about. And they're like, oh my gosh, everything's so clean and orderly. Their subways are not filth. You just compare the subway system, public transportation, compare it in China to here, and then make that statement again. You know, back in the day, the only way you would know is if you traveled there. And most people don't travel. But you ain't got no excuse now. You can get on the internet and you go see what that country's really like before you go spout off talking about they're trying to turn America into a third world hellhole like China. Go look. You don't even have to leave your living room. Pull up the video. Look at their public transportation. Look at the New York City subway system. You tell me who's third world and who's not. Ignorance. I got no time. Got no time for no ignorance. Anyway, what I do got time for is Christian specific segment. It's going to get better. Or maybe not. Well, only one way to find out, and that's to get in there and fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon at the Parish of the Patriots. Now, as you know, I always focus of the show, as far as my perspective, is towards people who are already believers. And to make, you know, strengthen your faith, help you work through some of the things you work through, just things that I figure out and I believe the Lord reveals to me. If I may be so if I may be so bold, and I try to share them with y'all and hope that, hey, maybe it'll help you out. You know, it wouldn't do me any good just to sit on the information and not share it. And, you know, as such, I've always said the show is focused towards those who are already believers. But of course, like I say, it's also, if you're a non-believer, that's fine too. I always say you might get something out of the show. So today we may get into several different things. This kind of leading up to the main thing I want to discuss. And again, this has to apply to somebody who's already there. You're already a believer. If you're like trying to decide if this is for you or not, this isn't probably going to work for you. So that's kind of what I was leading in here with. We're going to get into this, and I may have time to get into something else. I don't know. It just depends on how long we take with this. Now, for our discussion as we get into this, you either have to use your imagination, or if you want to get a piece of paper out and a pencil or something, that's fine too. But I thought we'd discuss a little bit, you know, the process of sinning. The process of sinning, how we get from, you know, going along just fine to committing a sin, because you don't just jump into it. And this also kind of ties in with some of our previous discussions. This is often the case. One thing leads you to another, and so on and so forth. Now, nobody just wakes up. I said this on a recent show. Nobody just wakes up and, wow, out of the blue, they're doing some outrageous sin they shouldn't be doing. It's a process. You leading up into it. And I thought we'd really bear down and kind of illustrate that process. Now, again, you can just imagine this. Not hard to, I'm not going to give you a complicated thing to imagine, or you can draw it out if you want to. But picture a long rectangular box. Now, I think of it in terms of like a light bar that goes on top of an ambulance or a police car. Long rectangular box, and you've got two vertical lines running up and down, dividing it into three sections. The middle section is a longer section than the other two sections. Now, obviously, I should do this like on a computer or something and make it like the cover art for the show. I'm not that talented. I'm just not that talented. But if you figure your long rectangular box, two vertical lines, dividing it into three sections, you have two smaller sections, one on each end and one longer section in the middle. Now, your right hand box, you would label that as temptation. That is temptation. Your other smaller box on the other far end, on the left side, the other smaller box is sin. You would label that as sin. Your struggle is what happens there in the middle, in that longer part. Now, you always start off on the right side. You know, like I say, this be you basically the flow of our box here we're talking about is from right to left. I don't know why I imagine it that way. You would think I would go the other direction, but nonetheless. You always start at that far right-hand box, which is temptation. Now, I believe temptation is something that probably the vast majority of Christian believers, when you get down to the nitty-gritty, they misunderstand it. I do. I believe most Christian believers misunderstand temptation and what it means to be tempted. I believe that most Christian believers misinterpret temptation as sin itself. So if you look at your box, you see that sin is on the far side of temptation. But most Christian believers believe that temptation, if they're tempted, they think that in and of itself is a sin. And of course, since it's not, because oftentimes temptation is from an external source. Now, we all know, or we should, we all know, you know, in the Bible, it tells us how Jesus went out to the desert and the devil tempted him. He went out to the desert, had to go through this process, and the devil had his time to tempt Jesus. Well, we know that Jesus was without sin. So if Jesus went to the desert and was tempted by Satan, then obviously temptation in and of itself is not sin. It is that thing which prompts you towards sin. But it's not temptation itself is in and of itself not sin. Now, to beat the dead horse for the 6 millionth time on this show. Everything in the Bible is about action. So when you look at that far left-hand box, your sin box, that is when you are taking the action. That is, what you are doing it. You are taking the action. It's too late. You've gone from temptation. Now you are literally, physically, you are doing the thing that you are not supposed to be doing. Again, the Bible concerns actions, not emotions, not how you're feeling or whatever. When you are actually doing the thing you're not supposed to be doing, now you are committing the sin. That's, we're over there now in the far left-hand box. So your struggle, this stands to reason, your struggle is between those two vertical lines, that place that's in the middle. Now, I would label that place in the middle internalization. Internalization. This is where you internalize. You see, the temptation comes. The tempter is going to come. You're going to face temptation. In this modern clown world society, you are going to face temptations of all sorts. You're going to have temptation. Now, how much you internalize that temptation depends, because it only flows the one direction. So if you, how much you internalize that temptation, and the longer you internalize it, you're constantly flowing over towards that left-hand side, towards the sin box, towards actually doing the sin, actually committing the sin. Physically, you're doing something that you're not supposed to be doing. One of the most, you know, you're probably quite familiar with, we've discussed it numerous times here, and I believe it's one of the things that Jesus said that's very, again, kind of misinterpreted and people don't understand, is when Jesus says, you know, said along the lines that, you know, well, the law says, you know, thou shalt not commit adultery, but I say, if you've looked upon a woman, you know, lustfully, I'm doing this off the top of my head, I'm sorry. If you look upon a woman lustfully, you've already committed adultery in your heart. And again, the vast majority of people, they read that or they hear that and they think, well, if you even think about it, you're already guilty, just like you've physically done it. That's not what he's saying. What Jesus was talking about there is internalization. He's talking about that middle box. That middle box, that section in the middle, internalization, that's how you're going to get, that's how you get from temptation, which is coming, whether you like it or not, it's coming, to you're doing it. That middle box is where your struggle is. Now, I believe that your goal here, because again, the temptation is going to come. You can't avoid it. I mean, I guess you hypothetically possibly could if you went up and lived on a remote mountain somewhere, but that's not realistic. Temptation is going to come. You have to know it's going to come. When it shows up, don't misinterpret it like, well, you've already sinned. Because the devil will come at you and say, well, you've already really sinned. Remember, the devil's a Bible quoter. I talked earlier, I referenced earlier, Jesus being going to the desert and being tempted. And what did Satan do the entire time? He'd sit there and spit. He'd sit there and spit Bible verses. You know, he'd sit there and I'll spit it out in a minute. He'd sit there and spit scripture at Jesus. Like, look at here. Look at here. Is it not written? Is it not written? Now, if you misinterpret the temptation as sin, the devil will come at you and say, well, you've really already sinned. What did we just say? Jesus, we're talking about how Jesus said, you've already committed adultery in your heart. That's why I think it's important that people understand what Jesus was saying. Because the devil come at you and say, well, you know, Jesus said you've already committed it in your heart. So see, you're already guilty. You might as well do it. I mean, if you've already committed it in your heart, you've already done it. If you're guilty, well, you might as well get the payoff from it. If the Lord's holding you guilty, he will sit there and use everything to deceive you. And yes, he is a Bible quoter. He will spit the scriptures at you. We may come back to this. I said I had other things we may get into today, and we may come back to that. But I'm forcing myself to stay on topic here. It's just a unique thing. Internalization. The temptation comes. Don't misinterpret that as sin. That's temptation, because it is going to come. What you're trying to do is, your struggle is in that box, that center box. Now, the first, that far right vertical line, the line that separates internalization from temptation, this is where your fight needs to be. This, that needs to be your barrier, your wall. Temptation should, your goal is for as much as possible for temptation to hit that wall and bounce off and never even get into the center box. And this, and you have these things. If somebody came, I don't know, if somebody came up to me and said, "Hey, Dan, I've got some free crack cocaine. Let's sit down and smoke it." That's going to bounce right off that right-hand vertical line because I wouldn't even consider it. It bounces right off. It never gets into that internalization box. It just right off. Now, if I have spent my entire life struggling with drug addiction, it might be a different story. You want your struggle to be on that line. Now, realistically, some things are going to get past that line. The things you're weak to are going to get past that line. Remember, the flow is always towards doing the action of sin. Now, when the temptation comes and it gets past it, it gets past your barrier. The strong man, I think of how Jesus talked about what happens when evil spirits are cast out. You know, they go through arid places, and after wandering around, they come back. See, they come back to you. And if there's nobody guarding the house, they find the place all cleaned up and looking nice, and they go and get some other spirits more wicked than themselves, and they come right back in. You've got to have that strong man. You've got to have somebody guarding the door. You want to keep that from getting internalized. You want to, as much as you can, you want to keep that bouncing off. But realistically, some of it's going to get past that, and you're going to wind up being tempted. Now you're thinking about it. You might start off like, "Oh, no, no, I'm not going to think about it," but you are. You know, you've internalized it, and now there's a little kernel in there, and now you're starting to swirl it around. Now you're still at the far right hand side of the internalization box. You've gone over that line, but as the longer that sits there and festers in the internalization box, remember, it's always flowing towards the action. You're internalizing it, you're chewing it up, you're thinking about it. Now, you always want to be aware that, you know, no matter where you are in your faith, you're still just a man. And you're going to be tempted. You have to be real with yourself. We're cautioned in the New Testament. It's written, you know, as you're trying to save people and snatch them out of the fire and bring them the truth, at the same time, you're supposed to be wary. You're supposed to be, you know, wary of even clothing stained by sin. In other words, don't get sucked in. I think one of the mistakes, I always hear people, you always, one of the common things you run into, and I tend to disagree with, I understand the reasoning behind it, and I understand that people have good intentions. One of the things I've heard a lot of times in my life, you have somebody, and they struggle with drugs. They struggle with a drug addiction, and they finally get clean, and they're so glad, and they're excited, and they're happy, they're clean, and all good on them. And it's like you'll ask those people, "Well, you know, you've kind of got your life together. What are you going to do?" "Well, I want to become a drug counselor. I want to help other people." And that's nice. That's a good intention. And I think it's a mistake, by and large, for most people. I do. I think it's a mistake because you already know what you're weak to. You can sit there and say, "Yeah, I've gotten clean and I got my life together." And praise the Lord for that. But you already know what your weakness is, and you're saying you're going to put yourself in a position to be exposed to that weakness. The temptation is going to come regardless. You shouldn't go seeking it out. But what happened is you talking to somebody who's still on drugs and whatnot, and you start telling them how, I know where you're coming from. And pretty soon, you know, you're laughing about, "Yeah, man, look. Man, one time me and my boys, we was so messed up," and you giggling and laughing about it. See, that temptation, you setting yourself up. I think you're setting yourself up for failure. You can't help other people unless you're helping yourself. You got to protect yourself. That's why we're warned in the Bible that while you're doing what you're doing, be careful even of clothing stained, tainted by sin. You got to protect yourself. You can't help anybody if you let yourself get sucked back in. If you let temptation get over that line into the internalization box in the middle, now you're not going to be able to help anybody. Because now you went from, oh, I'm leading them away from drugs, to you giggling and remember back on some of them fun times you had. Now it's in the internal now, and the longer it stays in there, it's always flowing towards the action. When you're first in there, you're like, hey, yeah, I'm kind of thinking about it. But you know, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do that. Yeah, as long as it's still in there and you're chewing it up and it's circulating, it's percolating in there. It's always flowing towards the action. You may think you got your hands around it, and it's always flowing. You got to get it out of there. You're going to have to figure out a way to kick it out of there, to quit internalizing, quit thinking about it, quit entertaining it. So I say, you want your battles to be at that line, because it's a lot easier if you never get it inside the internalization box. But once it's in there, now you got to work to get it out. And it's not inevitable that you won't be able to do that. You can do that, but it's going to be a lot more work than if you can just bounce it off. Now, the one place you don't want to be in your struggle is at that line on the far left side, the line between the deed and internalization, the sin and internalization. Because if you're at that line, you've percolated, you've internalized it now, it's flown all the way from the right to the left. Now you're at that line. You're right there on the cusp of doing the act. This is the most difficult place. This is 9 times out of 10, you've already decided. You're just trying to make up a justification. You're just trying to make up an excuse beforehand, a reasoning why you're going to do what you have decided to do. It's always a choice. While you were percolating that in the internalization box, I'm hoping this makes sense. If you're at that left side line between the act, that's the weakest place. You've internalized it long enough. Now you're at the cusp of doing it. And obviously, once you've crossed that line and you've started doing it, the odds of you being in the middle of the act and stopping and going, oh, wait, what am I doing? They're very slim. You're already kind of committed. You've jumped off the cliff now. I say that left-hand line, the one between internalization and sin, you don't want to wind up there. If you're wind up there doing your struggling, you've pretty much, you haven't lost yet because you haven't crossed, but you're there. More than likely, instead of trying to not do it, you're actually trying to make up an excuse. Or maybe you're trying to make it enough of a struggle to where after you do what you've really already decided to do anyway, you can sit around and say, man, I tried. I tried really hard. I was just too weak, Lord. You don't want to wind up there. You don't want to wind up there. That whole time it's traveling through that center box, well, the stuff that gets in there, this is your time. You got to try to kick it out. You got to kick it out, which means you got to get it out of your mind. You got to get it out of your mind. You got to get your mind recentered. You want to get that out of your mind to where it's no longer internalized. You got to kick it out. The longer you keep it in there percolating, the closer you're getting to that other side. Like I say, this is all about, you know, our struggle. Because this is our life. This is life. This is real life. And everybody goes through real life struggles in their faith. And as I said, starting off with this kind of the goal is to help believers in that struggle. You should never be so prideful to try to act like, you know, I don't go through any of those struggles. I don't go through any kind of struggles. Then there's something wrong, because you're a man walking this earth. You're going to go through some kind of struggling. Now, I said earlier we might get into something else, and I'm looking here, and I think we've got plenty of time here. We were talking earlier, about, you know, Jesus going to the desert and being tempted by the devil. One of the, of course, there's so many different sects, you know, different denominations in Protestantism. And one of the ones that people will ask about or talk about or point to and giggle or whatever, are the more, shall we say, the Pentecostal Protestants. You know who I'm talking about. They wailing and on the floor and speaking in tongues, and they'll have a preacher come in and he brings in a basket of rattlers, you know, brings in a basket of rattlesnakes, and they picking them up to snake handling, you know, snake handling. The Lord said. And don't get me wrong, I'm not putting people down. I've known in my life, I've known people who are Pentecostal. And they're some of the nicest people. You know, I mean, once you get outside of, you know, that very, you know, kind of seemingly out there behavior, they're actually some of the most down to earth, you know, really give you the shirt off their back type of people. I'm not trying to run people down, nor mock them, nor make fun of them. But the entire thing that they center this around, what they're kind of known for, is an example of the complete misunderstanding of what's in the Bible. A whole denomination. Got churches all over the country, and these people, by and large, it's centered around a misunderstanding, not understanding the Bible, not understanding what's written. And that's a shame. You know, it really is. When the book of Acts, when they talk about the day of Pentecost and they talk about, you know, they went out and they spoke in tongues, they mean literally other languages. God doesn't do things. God doesn't bring things about that don't make any sense. Remember, God is doing things. God is about action. Well, why would he have them come out and speak in tongues? Well, at this time, the church was just getting started out of the Judean region. Most of the people in that region, I would imagine, spoke Greek or something along that lines. But you see, God's plan involved this message of salvation through Jesus Christ was to spread all over the world. Well, how are you going to do that when you have people that speak all of these different languages? It says clearly in the book of Acts, they came out and they were speaking in tongues, and there was a crowd of people. Now, these people were from all over the world, and they spoke different languages, and it says, it's clearly written, it says people were standing there hearing it, and they were amazed, and because they heard their own language. Now, imagine if you know, to put it in a modern day context, because we're talking about, at that time, we're talking about pretty much different races of people than what we're talking about today. But to put it in a modern day context, if you came out suddenly and there was a crowd of people from across the world, and you came out as a group and you all start speaking these different languages, and there's a Chinese there, and he's like, oh my gosh, this guy's speaking perfect Mandarin. Or you had an African there and they heard somebody speaking in their home tongue. They were like, why is this guy able to speak my language? And you understand that it wasn't a show off. This had to have the purpose. If you're going to go speak to this other group of people that speaks a different language, they can't understand. They can't receive the word of God if they don't understand what you're saying. You've got to be able to speak the lingo, right? You see, God did that because there was a purpose. You had to go out. And you had to speak, you had to spread the word, but they can't hear the word if they don't understand what you're saying. How do you get past that? Because the believers were coming out of this region of Judea. They were coming out of this region initially. So they were all basically speaking the same language, but it's got to reach all these other people. You see, this is why God brought it about. It wasn't, you know, let's make a show of it. And it certainly wasn't people going, just doing a bunch of blabbering gibberish and saying, I'm speaking in tongues. They were literally speaking another language. Now, it's also written in the Bible, it says that, you know, in one of the letters, it says, you know, speaking in tongues is like the least, you know. And he said, nobody should speak in tongues in the church unless you have an interpreter there to explain what you're saying. So this, too, is an admonition against, or just jump up and start saying a bunch of stuff. And since nobody will know what you're saying, you must be speaking in tongues. It needs to be orderly. And when you speak in tongues, you got to have somebody there that can say, well, what he's saying is the Lord wants me, you know, because if you had somebody stand up and again started speaking in Chinese and he had an interpreter there and said, well, he's saying that, you know, I can speak this language. Well, if, for instance, the church was saying we need somebody to go spread this message to this group of Chinese people, well, God's probably telling you he's your guy. Otherwise, there's no point to it. There's no point to it. And yet in the Pentecostal churches, they'll jump up and start, and it's just gibberish. Gibberish. Now, the other thing, the snake handling. Because this is the things that people will point out, non-believers will point out and snicker. Again, it's all a misunderstanding. Yes, it is written. He's telling the apostles themselves, personally, that as you go out, you'll have this certain amount of protection. If a snake bites you, poisonous snake bites you, won't harm you. And this is carried out when Paul got shipwrecked on the island. And they got a boat. They went through this ordeal. They get on the island, and they're clearing this brush out. They're clearing this wood out, and a snake bites him on the hand, a venomous snake. And the locals knew, that's you dying. You got bit by that snake, you dying. He just shook it off in the fire and kept going. And they were amazed because he wasn't killed. Well, why? Because God had stuff for Paul to do, and he couldn't have him dying right there when he happened across a snake. Now, the Pentecostals will misinterpret this and say, see, we had to prove our faith by reaching in the basket of rattlers. And if they get bit, then it's like, well, my faith is buckled at that time or something. And yet we know. And this is why I said, well, we might come back to it. When Jesus was tempted in the desert, Satan was spitting out scripture at him. You know, well, throw yourself off this building because it says it's written. Is it not written that the Lord will send his angels and no harm will come to you? You won't break a single bone. Prove it. And Jesus responded, it's also written, don't put the Lord your God to the test. How do these people put all that together? You know, they sit there and do a snake handling. How is that not? And they'll say, because it says that you'll be able to handle these snakes and they won't kill you. The Jesus response is, don't put the Lord your God to the test. Because I don't know about you, but I see that as a big putting God to the test. Putting God to the test. And again, my intention here is not to ridicule people or make fun of their faith or what, you know, how they're trying to go about it. But wrong is wrong and incorrect is incorrect. You have to understand, you know, when you have whole denominations that are centered around just a simple misunderstanding of what's written, you know, that's not right. I mean, nothing. Nowhere in there are you instructed to throw yourself down on the floor and start flopping around and saying, oh, the Holy Spirit is overcoming me. I mean, I'm sorry, it's not. In fact, again, just the opposite. The early apostles instructed the churches to be orderly, to be orderly. Don't be jumping up and hollering out and saying you're speaking to, it needs to be orderly. Don't be throwing yourself down in the aisle, flopping around saying the Holy Spirit is moving in you or something. You may be excited and you may be joyous and praising God, and that's all good, but keep control of yourself. Don't be grabbing no snakes. Don't be grabbing no bad day. Dan ain't going to be grabbing no basket. See, you think I'm going to go around, grab a basket of snakes? No. No, if I see a snake, well, depending on the snake. I mean, if it's just like a bull snake or something, I'm going to leave them alone. But if it's a rattler or a copperhead, yeah, I'm going to pick up a big stick or a T-post or whatever, and I'm going to beat that thing to death. People would be freaking out. They see snakes, and they're like, ah, and they run in the other way. And it's like people that, you know, grew up in a rural setting, they're like, oh, hell, we're going to have to kill that thing. You don't have a gun. I mean, you're looking around. Hold on. You're looking around. Find something. Beat that thing. Beat him down. Then put your foot on him. Get your pocket knife out and cut his head off. There you go. People from the city, people grew up in the city, in town, the first time they see that, they're like freaking out. What are you doing? Beating this snake to death. What you think I'm doing? I'm beating this snake to death. And I ain't going to be handling no snakes. Be handling no snake. I ain't wallowing around on the floor neither. And I ain't going to go and be talking in tongues. We know, as I said before, there was a reason they had to speak in tongues. I mean, God has a reason for the things he's doing. He doesn't do it just to show. We've already talked about at that time, the message had to get out these people that spoke different languages. So God had to make it to where these people in Judea never spoke those languages before in their lives could speak the language so that they could hear the news, the good news, so they could hear the gospel. That was the reason. You know, If a Chinaman needs to hear the gospel, they're people, they're Chinese people that speak their language that can tell it to him. He don't need Dan doing it. I don't need to be able to learn. God ain't going to need to make me speak it so that I can go spread the gospel to these people. There's people that can do that already. God has a reason. God has a reason. He had this small group of people starting off. Yeah, he couldn't have one of them getting killed by accident because they got bit by a snake. He's saying, you know, I'm going to protect y'all because you, I just got this small group. Y'all got to go out and spread from here. Y'all got to have this protection. People reading that now. You know, in a lot of cases like that, people read, you know, where Jesus sent out the apostles and said, go out. Don't take any money. Don't take any food. Don't take any extra clothes. The Lord is going to provide. People read that and be like, man, I'm going to tell you, go try to do that. You're going to be hungry and starving. And you're going to be like, why is the Lord abandoning me? No, you're putting God to the test. He was telling that to those guys at that time for that mission. Just right then. They weren't talking to you. You better have you a few coins in your pocket. Better pack you a bento. You gotta pack your bento. Take your lunch. You're gonna get hungry. you're gonna be getting hungry. Don't be sitting there talking about the Lord will provide. When you left your lunch at home, that's all on you. Don't be grabbing a basket of snakes either. We'll wrap up on that note. Hope you got something out of all of the show. As always, especially the Christian specific segment. Think about it. Draw it out. Think about it. Stay out of the center box. Try to stay out of there as best you can. Things are going to get in there. Get them out as quickly as you can. It's a lot easier the further to the right you are, then the longer it's percolating in there. You're going to have a tougher time. I'm telling you. Hope it helps you out. Hope it strengthens your faith. And I hope I'll see you here next time for the Parish of the Patriots.